sometimes we might disagree about things, but when the going gets tough, you know, there's a lot of strength in having family where, you know, you feel that loyalty that if this business fails, I have failed my family. So it makes you work that much harder to keep the business strong and keep things going.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker, along with my co-host, Jordan Barker.
Hello.
We're very, very excited today to have a special guest with us. This is the one and only, the Grand Poobah of Ruby's Inn, just at the mouth of Bryce Canyon. Lance Syrett, General Manager of Bryce Canyon. And Lance, did I say it correctly? Are you the Grand Poobah or are you the General Manager?
Well, as I say, most people call me the General Manager. Depends on who you are. I make my staff call me the Grand Poobah. But I'm just the Grand Poobah of Ruby's Inn, not of Bryce Canyon. So,
oh, right. Okay. Right.
All
right.
We won't get that confused.
Yep,
well, exactly. Lance, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
So to get started, we love to just kind of grab a little bit of background. Who are people listening to? You know, your General Manager at Ruby's Inn. Why should they care? Tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, as I say, so Ruby's Inn, that's the most exciting part of my title is, you know, Ruby's Inn is a 103-year-old family business. We're located right at the doorstep to Bryce Canyon National Park. So if you've been to Bryce Canyon, you've been by Ruby's Inn. And, you know, we started out for a long time, you know, just being this little small stop in the road. Ruby, the founder, was actually my great-grandfather. And we always talk about the fact that Ruby was a man because a lot of people think of Ruby as this little old lady. And I can understand that. But, you know, we do get people that call the hotel and say, hey, Ruby was my aunt. I need a discount. So don't try that because, you know, you got the gender wrong. But anyway, so Reuben Syrett, he was my great-grandfather. And 103 years ago, we come out here with a to be a rancher, and he just kind of dumb luck he got in the tourist business. And anyway, so my job is general manager of the hotels here, and basically that title means I got to keep the rooms full and the people happy. And yeah, so family business. I'm fourth generation. We got a lot of fifth generation running around here, and we've actually got a few sixth generation that poke their heads in once in a while. So yeah, it's a fun job. It's always exciting, something new every day. Never boring.
And tell us a little bit, Lance. I mean, great to get the history and the fact that it's a sixth generation business, and also to get the gender right if you're going to try to call and scam Ruby's Inn for a discount. So that's right. Helpful as well. Tell right. me a little bit about what Ruby's Inn is, because if you've never been there,
sure.
You have no idea all of the amazing amenities and stuff like that at Ruby's Inn. So tell me a little bit about that.
Right. So Ruby's Inn as a resort is actually three different hotels. We've got the Best Western Plus Ruby's Inn, the Best Western Plus Bryce Canyon Grand, and the Bryce View Lodge. So between those three properties, we have 700 deluxe hotel rooms. We also have our RV parking campground. We've got about 250 full hookup sites. We've got a lot of tent sites. We've got cabins, camping, teepees. You know, those are kind of a novelty. The Europeans, the Asians, they love to come in and, you know, say they've slept in a teepee. So those are a lot of fun. And then we also have several different restaurants. We've got conference space. One of our restaurants is our Ebenezer's Barn and Grill. It's not a bar and grill. We have a barn and grill. But anyway, so that is each night during the summer. It's a real, you know, country western band, and they entertain you in there. And it's just a really good time.
And you just revamped the Ebenezer's experience, didn't you?
Yeah, we just revamped that, and it's a brand new show this year. And holy cow, everybody's just having a good time, and the early returns are awesome, and everybody's having a great time.
And I went down there, and sorry to interrupt you, but I went down there, and we had a blast. You know, I had seen the old show and experienced that, and went down just about a month ago and experienced the launch of the new show. And I tell you, it's night and day. We had a wonderful time
awesome.
Down there. Yeah, you were down there too, right, Jordan?
Yep, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it goes from kind of just having a bunch of cowboys around the fire to now you really feel like you've been to a concert and the excitement. And yeah, and it's you're excited to go back.
And some real up-and-coming stars there too, right?
Oh, yeah, a lot of up-and-coming stars. We've got a lot of pieces, you know, direct connect to Nashville. We've got singer-songwriters who, maybe you've never heard of them, but when they start dropping names and who they've worked with and the songs they've written and stuff, it's a pretty amazing ensemble. The Bryce Canyon Wranglers, that's the title of the band. And, you know, a lot of moving pieces there. You know, we kind of think of ourselves a little bit like the Grand Ole Opry now, where, you know, you come and play as part of the Bryce Canyon Wranglers, but not necessarily the same actors. Most of them are the same every night, but sometimes they change out. So that's a lot of fun, that Cowboy Dinner Show. That's definitely a destination thing now that are bringing people in there. It's kind of amazing how many people come in here to Ruby's Inn, want to experience, you know, maybe an activity or stay overnight or something. And they never even go to Bryce Canyon, which absolutely blows my mind. But you know, in addition to our amenities here at the resort, we've also got activities like horseback riding. We've got ATV tours, mountain bike rentals. We've got a great bike path that goes right through by the property here. You can bike right from Inspiration Point inside Bryce Canyon National Park and go to the Bob Marek Canyon. And it's for all types of riders, and it is phenomenal. So that's some of the things we have going on here at Ruby's Inn. So there's something for everybody.
That's awesome. Thanks for giving us that background, Lance. One of the things that we always like to do when we have our guests on this podcast, because we're talking about tourism, we're talking about destinations, is there some place that you have always wanted to go, but you've never had the opportunity to go? Is there like a dream destination that you've just been salivating to go there, but haven't had a chance to get there yet?
And you're pretty well traveled. Is there anywhere you haven't been?
Yeah, man, I was gonna say, that's a good question. You know, for being in the travel business, for being in the tourism business, I think my elusive destination I'd like to go to is just like 2 weeks in my backyard and nobody bothered me. And just turn my cell phone off, go work on my raspberry patch in my garden for 2 weeks. You know, there's a lot of places in the world I'd like to go. You know, my wife, she's high on Europe. I've never been to Europe yet. I've been around it. And yeah, I feel like I've been there. Like I say, you European travelers, some days there's more Europeans in Bryce Canyon than there is anything else. But I don't know. That's a great question. Somewhere that you can't get cell phone service. Where's that? I'd like to go there.
Isn't that funny, though? I mean, you've been all over the world because of your role in tourism, right? And
it's true.
Your ideal place is no cell phone service in your backyard. And in all reality, it's not far from your backyard that you really don't get cell phone service. Because I know from Bryce Canyon to Tropic, where you live, there's about 7 minutes of no cell service on the way, right?
Yeah, that used to be true, but they put a new tower in, and now they can get you all the way down to the canyon. Yeah, you can have uninterrupted cell phone service. So those little elusive hamlets with no cell phone service, those are becoming fewer and fewer. I was on a cruise ship this spring, and that was kind of nice. Although they offer you cell phone plans, but you know they're kind of expensive, so you can use that as an excuse and say, sorry guys, I'm not going to buy the expensive plan, so you can't call me. That was nice.
Sure.
Yep.
Well, tell me, okay, so you talked about where your place that you'd like to go, which isn't very far, it sounds like, but what about your favorite place that you've visited?
So I'm kind of an outdoorsy guy. I've been up to the Northwest several times, been to Alaska, you know, Vancouver Island, the Olympic Peninsula, really had a good time out there amongst nature. Again, I'm a small town kid, so cities, you know, bigger metropolitan areas, been to plenty of those, and those don't appeal to me. So places I've gone, again, places like Alaska, Washington, rural places like that, that's where I like to go.
Nice. Obviously, you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that Ruby's is a family-owned, a family-run business. But why are you, well, obviously there's tourism in your blood, if you will, right? But why are you still in tourism? What is it about tourism that still allows you to maintain that fire and that passion and that drive, right? I mean, even though it's a family business, you don't have to be in the family business, I assume, right? So why is it that you are still involved in tourism? What is it about the industry that you like so much?
Well, yeah, so that's a good question. You know, when I went to college, my major, first of all, my major was free food, but then I figured out I couldn't graduate in free food. So I had to pick a real major. So I ended up majoring in finance and economics. I took the LSAT. I was going on to law school. I was going to be one of those guys. Then we moved home to take a break for that summer and pay off a little bit of debt. And actually, we were going to take a year off. So anyway, me and my wife came home and kind of started a family. And it was kind of her idea. She's like, hey, well, do we really need to do all that stuff? Why don't we stay here? And of course, the family kind of made it kind of a good career path for me if I wanted to stay. And so I took a break from going to law school, and I And I tell people sometime I'm still on a break. So anyway, so that was 14 years ago. So I'll tell you, tourism is a fun industry to be in. One thing that my wife mentions sometimes is she mentions the fact that even though we live in a small town, sometimes it feels like a bigger place. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, Ruby's Inn, Bryce Canyon, being kind of a crossroads of the world. As I mentioned, most days there's more international people here in Bryce Canyon National Park than there is any than Americans, and especially like Utahns, you know, being right here in the state. So you get a lot of that diversity. You know, you walk through the lobby and you hear all kinds of languages being spoken, whether it's French, German, Chinese, you name it. There was always, you know, something going on as far as that goes. And you know, when I committed to come back to the family business, I committed to doing my best. You know, in family businesses, sometimes you get kind of big and there's a lot of people that are just kind of coasting along and kind of feel entitled. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. And I just wanted to be involved, to make a difference. You know, that's why every time I turn around, I'm getting put into something else. You know, I'm kind of opinionated. I'm kind of a loud mouth. And, you know, it tends to be in this industry when you start mouthing off and saying things ought to be this way, and they say, well, why don't you step up and try to make it that way? So that's kind of influenced my career. And again, in tourism, there's just opportunities to travel, opportunities to see things, to do things that you wouldn't normally do. And every day is different. Here at the hotel, you think sometimes things can get monotonous, but man, there's a curveball thrown at you every day, and it's fun. And I'm kind of sick and twisted. I'm kind of a masochist that way where, you know, if I had just a job where every day was the same, I think I'd be bored out of my mind. So, I like the change. I like the fun, meeting new people. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Good answer.
Thank you.
I think we probably should have let the listeners know a little earlier on. Lance and I have known each other for years and have worked together for years. And so if this podcast seems a little more comfortable or a little more casual than some of the other episodes, you know, Lance and I have had some interesting experiences together, which kind of brings down the guards a little bit. We're both avid BYU fans and have gone to several away BYU football games together. We've been to New Orleans for that, and we've been to Texas. And anyway, yeah, we go way back, and so it's kind of fun to just have this conversational podcast episode. But one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on, Lance, is you work very, very closely with your county tourism office. And that's Garfield County Tourism in Utah. And you guys have developed a relationship that at least from what I've seen is very unique, because there's a lot of DMOs who have a difficult dynamic between them and their partners, and getting everyone on the same page, working toward the same goal to generate success for both the individual business and for the county. Tell me how you've been able to do that and what makes your relationship with the destination so important.
Well, that's a great question. That's a long question. So, you know, as far as our relationship here at Ruby's Inn with our DMO, my inspiration, I go back to my Uncle Bob. Again, we're a family business, and he was the general manager before me. And, you know, when I first started in the hotels, when I was growing up in the family business, for the most part, I spent my time in food service and Western activities. So so my Uncle Bob was always this kind of this mystery to me. It's like, he was kind of my inspiration, kind of my mentor. Again, after I decided to take a break from going to law school, and as I come into the hotel and started working in here and kind of looking up to him and how he did things, he always said, you know, if you can't complain about how things are going unless you get in there and try to change them. That was something that always kind of inspired me. And then how that applies to our relationship with our DMO, with our local office of tourism. So Bob, for a long time, he was involved in the Area Travel Council or the Tourism Advisory Board. You know, in the state of Utah, as in most states, they take a portion of the hotel tax, and that goes kind of a pay-it-forward type fund. Staying here at the time, part of their taxes go to promote the guy that's coming the next time. So that structure here, you know, just kind of seeing how Bob interacted on that board, You know, and another thing I was told me, he says, you know, ultimately the DMO, the Area Office of Tourism, is funded by our hotel taxes. The things you have to do at the hotel, you know, you're cleaning toilets, you're changing sheets, you're dealing with difficult guests, and you're making that money, you know. So you think about that. So that money is going into a big pot, and you're the one that earned it. So it's like, why would a hotel person not try to get involved in how that money is spent and try to create our own destiny, so to speak? You know, why not? Why not get involved? Why not stick your nose in there? And as I said before, I tend to be pretty opinionated. And I learned that from my Uncle Bob. And if you get really opinionated, eventually you kind of get a seat at the table. And again, that's going to benefit your business. It's going to benefit the businesses around you. And if you're not there to help make the decision, then somebody else making that decision in those directions for you. So
it sounds, Lance, like that bridge was built a long time ago. I mean, you kind of started out watching your Uncle Bob, and then you moved into that role. How can somebody who maybe the bridge either hasn't been built or isn't complete, how can somebody start that and improve that, whether they're on the hotel side or on the destination side?
You know, just showing up. The life of a general manager is a very busy one, but you got to make it a priority to show up to meetings. You know, just because you are not necessarily on a tourism board, or maybe it's a chamber board or something like that. And just show up and see what's going on, and give your 2 cents, and make contacts with those leaders, the ones that are kind of driving the conversation. You know, the director of the DMO or the chamber. I mean, most of it's just showing up. You know, I always in my job, part of my job, we do a lot of traditional advertising, things like that, but we also do a lot of trade events. A lot of these trade events, we go to market directly to tour operators, and we'll go to these trade shows and things like that. And me, I speak no foreign languages. I barely speak English. I don't even speak that very well. But one of these trade shows I go to is mostly Asian. And I know no Asian languages. I'm sure I slaughter the customs and things like that. And so, and I get asked, because I'll show up at these trade shows and I'm handing out brochures, and I get the question, do you think you really did a lot of good? One thing that I've learned over the years is just showing up. Just showing up, even though that person speaks Chinese, I speak English, I smile, I give them a business card, maybe I give them a treat, a little tchotchke, something like that, and a brochure, and they can go back and kind of look it up in their own language and look up the destinations, things like that. And you get business from those relationships. And again, was it a great spiel I gave to that person? Was it a great marketing message or something like that? No, it wasn't. It was just showing up. And it's the same thing with being involved in your local DMO, your office of tourism, chamber of commerce, whatever it is. Showing up's half the game.
So you mentioned, as a GM of a hotel, or one of the hotel partners, that makes sense to try to build that bridge. What advice would you give to the tourism office? You know, a lot of the folks that we talk to, the relationships that they have, they're not as fortunate in some cases as you and Garfield County. Sometimes there's bad blood, or there's issues, or politics always kind of makes things really interesting, right? Like lots of different voices, that have competing interests and things that are important to them. So what advice would you give to a tourism office that don't have the support of their local partners, whether those are hotels or local businesses? What advice would you have for them to get more involved?
If a DMO person wants to get that buy-in from their partners, go see them, and go see them face to face. You know, go visit with them face to face and see what matters to them, and act like you care. You know, you start out not asking them, you know, about the business relationship or going all in on the business relationship, but find out who they are, what their family is like, and what their family situation is, and what they like to do in their spare time. And then, you know, at the very end, say, oh yeah, I guess we got to talk business. And then you can segue into that. But it's the same thing with these DMO partners. If you don't act like you care about your partners, I mean, people aren't dumb. People pick up on that. And, again, go see them, go visit with them, get to know them. And I think that the buy-in, just from one face-to-face meeting like that, happens really quickly. And it doesn't matter how many emails you send out from your database, they're not going to buy into what you're saying unless you think you care.
Yeah, yeah. Building relationships is a manual process, right? It's not going to happen from an email.
Right.
So I think that's a really good point. You mentioned that as far as the tourism revenue for the county goes, you as a hotel earned a lot of that. And so you have a major contribution to the county destination and the marketing that they do. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you earn that money and how you generate success. You know, what are you guys doing? And obviously, as your ad agency, we know some of the answer, right? But would like to have our listeners understand, as a major resort, what have you seen work well for you to generate the success that pushes not only your organization forward, but the county as well?
So one of the things that I think has been Ruby's strength over the years is the ability to play the long game as far as where is our business going to be 5 years or 10 years from now. You know, sometimes, some people say, well, you know, if you look at Moab or you look at Springdale and they're selling their rooms for $300 or $400, they're like, why haven't you done that at Ruby's? Why haven't you done that at Bryce? Why don't you drive your rates that high? And it's like, okay, we understand where the business is now and we understand the demand of how things are going, but it's like, where's the business going to be 5 years from now? Where's it going to be 10 years from now? The fact that we're a family business and we're 103 years old, we can look 10 years down the road and say, where's our business going to be in 10 years? Not to bag on some other hotels and stuff that have come into the market, but some of those are owned by hedge funds or by management companies and stuff. And they're not worried about where they're going to be in 5 years. They're worried about where is our quarterly marks going to be so we can get our bonus, things like that. Where if when you're a family business and when you think long term, it's you make decisions that are more long term. It's not where we're going to be this quarter, where we're going to be this year. It's going to where we're going to be in 5 years, where we're going to be in 10 years. Did that answer your question?
Absolutely. Yeah, it did. It definitely did. I wanted to double click on something you said, because you said, you know, you have the ability to play the long game. You mentioned that Ruby's is a family owned business. I'm sure that there's pros and cons to being involved in a family owned business. And you and I have had some conversations off the air about, some of the dynamics that are at play there. And it's always fascinating to me. I think about, you know, my siblings, as much as I love them, I think it would be interesting to see them every day, right? To work with them every day. And so I'm always fascinated whenever I see family-owned businesses that, especially one like Ruby's Inn, where you've been able to be so successful over such a long period of time. Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic of having a family-owned business and, you know, maybe what that looks like and maybe even how that gives you guys, in some cases, a competitive advantage?
Absolutely. As I say, with any family dynamic, there's always going to be some issues. You can't agree all the time. I can tell you that me and my wife, we have a rule that we don't talk about the business at home. you need some boundaries. And for the most part, me and my siblings kind of have the same rule. It's like, all right, let's wait till Monday. Let's wait until we're in the building before we start talking about that, because it can be consuming. You know, you come to work and you see your siblings or your cousins or your uncles or whatever, and then you go home and you get the same thing, and maybe you go to a school activity and it's the same thing, and maybe you go to church and it's the same thing. So you definitely have to compartmentalize that and say, okay, am I mad at them personally? Am I disagreeing personally, or is this a family issue? And if it's a family issue,
what a hard thing to have to figure out.
Yeah. It's tough. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's tough. And we go to these family business seminars sometimes, and they always mention that most family businesses fail by the third generation. And there's all kinds of, we can go all day about the reasons why.
And you guys are well past that, right?
Well, as I say, we're fourth generation going on the fifth. And one of the neat things about that statistic about the family businesses is most fail by the third generation. But once you get past the third generation, it actually starts reversing the trend, and they start becoming more successful and less family businesses fail. So I think the idea being, if you haven't blown it by the third generation, you probably kind of figured something out and maybe you're going to be okay. So you have to compartmentalize. You have to say, okay, this is family, this is business. Otherwise it can just drive you nuts. So sometimes I think maybe that's why I'm losing my hair lately, but anyway, lots of strengths in a family business. Sometimes we might disagree about things, but when the going is tough. You know, there's a lot of strength in having family where, you know, you feel that loyalty that if this business fails, I have failed my family. So it makes you work that much harder to keep the business strong and keep things going.
Where nobody wants to be the break in the chain, right?
Yeah, you don't want to be the break in the chain. And you think about it, it's like, you don't want to fail your family. And if it's more of a corporate environment, it's kind of like, well, I never liked that guy over there anyway, you know. And it's like, so anyway, so yeah, there's definitely some more pressure. And I think that's a strength where you you feel that loyalty and feel that, you know, you got to keep bread on the table.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to switch gears a little bit, Lance. One of the things that I think Ruby's Inn does an incredible job of, I've taken my family down there a few times and stayed, it's the visitor experience, you know, and you talked about a lot of the different amenities that are available, you know, from when you check in to when you go on an excursion or to when you go to the dinner theater at Ebenezer's. I mean, the customer experience has got to be a major focus for you guys because you've done such a good job of it. How do you make sure that that is a good customer experience, and how do you handle it when a customer perceives that it's not?
Well, we definitely try to train and retrain and reiterate and focus and to try to get our staff on board. You know, as a kid around here, you know, again, when the business was fairly small, I can remember being a kid and knowing absolutely everybody on the property. And now, even as a full-time manager, man, that's hard to do. So it's, you know, we've got a lot of good people, a lot of managers, a lot of, you know, pieces, tools, things like that, that help us to get that training out to our frontline staff. You know, here at Ruby's Inn, one of the issues we have is, you know, again, in 1978, we had 100 hotel rooms. And now here in 2019, you know, about 40 years later, we have 700. So we've grown seven times in that time period. And wow. Then the smaller towns around here, like Tropic, where I live, Panguitch is close by, they virtually had zero growth over that same 40-year time frame. So we have to recruit employees from all over the world. And sometimes that's some unique, it brings some unique dynamics to our property. You know, we'll have work campers, you know, which are retired, you know, school teachers, retired military people who live in an RV and they travel through and they come in and they scoop ice cream all summer. And then we'll have, you know, kids from the Philippines who come in and clean hotel rooms. Then we'll have kids from Montenegro who might come and, you know, wait tables in the restaurant, things like that. So anyway, so that constantly retraining. We got a full-time HR staff. I got to give them a shout out. They're great. They do customer service training. And yeah, it's a moving target. It's hard to hit, but we try to do the best we can and try to deliver on that customer experience and kind of try to, as much as possible, go back to those values that Ruby and his wife, Minnie, and, you know, my grandpa and grandma had.
So it sounds like the training and focus on that is never done.
It's never done. As I say, it's, you know, we've got some employees that come in and we have, you know, staff that come in on a visa, you know, and the maximum they can stay is 4 months. You know, the tourist season is almost 8 months. So you can only have those employees for half the season. So you have to retrain right in the middle of the season. Again, I'm losing my hair. When I start talking out loud, I can figure out why.
That makes sense. You touched on a little bit about where Ruby's started. You've talked a little bit about where Ruby's is today. What does the future look like for you guys? And what, you know, how do you, you talk about playing the long game. What does that long game look like for you?
Right. As I say, well, here Ruby's Inn, we've been here for 103 years and we hope to be here for 103 more. Definitely going to have to change a little bit as far as the family transition. You know, for my generation, they were basically able to welcome everybody back, open arms and pay us a good, you know, wage and have a good career path for us. And, you know, we have cold winters down here, so we've got a lot of kids on the next generation. So anyway, so we have to, you know, kind of plan what's Ruby's going to look like to the next generation where maybe not necessarily everybody can come back and be part of the family business like we did. But, you know, we're constantly changing things here, you know. Bryce Canyon City, that came in 2007. So that's kind of opened up some development opportunities here as far as, you know, more housing. We just built a big housing project last year. you know, in the new share economy, that's not escaped us. You know, we are a very traditional resort, mostly hotel rooms, but we've got some vacation rental offerings that, you know, you just can't ignore that space. The Airbnb, VRBO, they're such a big player in the travel market now. So I see us in the next few years, probably building more inventory, more family type cabins, homes, things like that, that we can rent that will appeal to those type of travelers. But, just keep doing what we're doing. We're trying to preserve we always like to think we're providing kind of a Western experience, as far as our cowboy dinner shows, the horseback riding, the nightly rodeos during the summertime, which is trying to preserve that Western experience. And again, our customers love it because they're coming from, Western Europe or Asia, and they want to come in and see. They want to see cowboys. They want to see the Wild West, and they want to see open spaces. And we're trying to preserve that as much as we can.
Well, good deal. Well, Lance, I think it's that time. I really appreciate it. We appreciate you taking the time to come and join our podcast today. Once again, Lance Syrett, the Grand Poobah of Ruby's Inn. Thanks a lot for taking the time, my friend. We really appreciate everything you shared with us today on the show.
This has been the Destination Marketing Podcast. Want to invite everybody, while I have the chance, to join our LinkedIn group as well. It's Destination Marketers on LinkedIn. If you search that, you can apply to join the group. And we'd love to have you join the community that is sharing experiences and expertise and helping people continue to get better in tourism marketing, where we can all grow as a whole. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we look forward to talking to you soon.